This is a podcast by The Straits Times and Money FM 89.3.
It's time now to turn our attention to China. And speaking of China, you know, one of the things happening on the other side is the U.S., you know, out of Afghanistan officially today, the world's second largest economy. Where does it stand with regard to the Taliban crisis? Well, Foreign Minister Wang Yi has told U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken via phone call over the weekend that the international community should engage with Afghanistan's new Taliban rulers and positively guide them. And the statement, he said, Washington should work with the international community to provide economic and humanitarian aid to Afghanistan and help the new regime run governmental functions normally. And China has not officially recognized the Taliban as Afghanistan's new rulers, but Wang Yi last month hosted Mullah Barada, who's chief of the group's political office. So we'll find out more about their stance with regard to this new Afghanistan in that sense. Meanwhile, China's so-called panda diplomacy is in the spotlight after Singapore welcomed its first panda cub born to Jia Jia and Kai Kai on August 14th. Observers say this new arrival, not yet to be named, serves as a timely reminder of China's soft power reach. Also, panda loans have reportedly been on the rise since the arrival of President Xi Jinping, alongside his increased ambitions for China to go global. Let's find out more from Dr. Oh A. Sun, Senior Fellow of Singapore Institute of International Affairs. Dr. Oh, how have you been?
Well, I'm coping as much as I could. Hope you are doing well as well.
Yeah, we're all just trying to get through this together the best that we can. All right, I suppose, Dr. Oh, let's start off with China's stance on Afghanistan. What else can you tell us about it? I mean, any indication of what they really think of the Taliban there?
Well, I think just with any other major powers nowadays, you see the Taliban's taking over control over the whole of, or almost the whole of Afghanistan. So for China, there are at least, for example, three different or interrelated considerations as to why they must have some sort of contact, some sort of formal links with the Taliban. Number one is, of course, this Belt and Road initiatives. You know, they want to develop this, shall we say, continental sort of economic development belt across central parts of Asia. And if you could include Afghanistan on that corridor, then China, in a sense, could extend its economic and political influence across the central parts of Asia. Number two is, of course, there are a lot of, various resources in Afghanistan itself. And China is eager to, help them to sort of open up those resources for commercial usage and so on. And then, of course, there's a security concern because Afghanistan, it does share very narrow strip of border with China. And then there's fear that if the situation in Afghanistan is not stable, it could spill over to the western part of China and so on. So in that respect, China has been very proactive. Even before the Taliban take over, you saw they invited a delegation of Taliban to China in July. And I think about a month later, Taliban took over the whole of Afghanistan.
Mm. The Uyghur community would also be on their toes right now, on edge right now, with regard to how this relationship between China and the Taliban pans out, right?
A number of Uyghurs, they migrated from China to Central Asian countries, including Afghanistan. I think by last count, there are at least about 2,000 of them in Afghanistan.
Right.
And now that the Taliban and China are chumming up to each other, of course, some of these Uyghurs, they are a bit concerned about their personal safety and security. Yeah.
This podcast is available on our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Like us and rate us. And now, back to our podcast episode.
Dr. Oh, more on China's comments with regard to America's withdrawal from Kabul. I mean, they're seeing it as a sign of the U.S.'s decline on the world stage. But at the same time, Beijing's foreign policymakers are much more cautious because they want to avoid a repeat of Washington's mistakes. So observers now commenting, they're saying that Afghanistan is not worth the trouble for China, and it's, you know, the money that it has, the yuan that it has. This alliance, I mean, what are the possible negatives to it? I mean, could it hurt China, you know, on the flip side of things?
Well, Afghanistan is well known as so-called the graveyard of empires, right? I think China is very eager to very actively engage with Taliban specifically, but, you know, the Afghans in general, because, as you know, China is very good in, for example, building a lot of infrastructures in terms of extracting minerals and so on. And they believe that if a country is prosperous, then it will become more stable, then it would create more opportunities both for the local populations as well as for Chinese businessmen. So I think they will take a rather cautious approach when it comes to whether to station any of their troops there. I frankly don't think so. Mm-hmm. But I think they would indeed have a lot of their, you know, like these conglomerates going into Afghanistan. And when, of course, these conglomerates going into Afghanistan, there would be some sort of security measures. You know, you must have some sort of bodyguard guarding them, right? Yeah.
Ah, okay. Well, we're on the line this morning with Dr. O.A. Sun, Senior Fellow, Singapore Institute of International Affairs. So, sort of switch tracks. Still on the topic of foreign policy, but about China's panda diplomacy. Nothing new there. In fact, this gift exchange of the pandas, these cuddly bears, it dates back to the Tang Dynasty in the 7th century. Now, since then, we've got the Soviet Union, America, Japan, and even North Korea. They've all received them. But the loaning concept only began in the 1980s. Dr. O, could you tell us more about how China sees panda diplomacy? I mean, what's the objective and is it working?
Well, of course, traditionally, in modern times, you know, just like ping-pong diplomacy is a means to sort of reach out to potentially friendly countries and so on. But mind you, nowadays, these pandas don't come free. They are, well, on loans or on rentals, I think is the more appropriate term for it. Namely, you have to pay, I think, up to, let's say, $1 million every year to this panda conservation center in China. And then you need to pay for all this panda food, which is fresh bamboos. You know, it's not cheap. So, but of course, you know, it's very cuddly. It's a rare animal. And thereby, you know, if the people of a friendly country to China, they would visit the zoo and would see all these very cute pandas, hopefully then they would have an even better image of China. So, well, it has worked well so far at large, but sometimes you do have incidents such as I just read about some sort of a panda getting obese. You do have this very practical
too much bamboo
problem. Yeah, too much bamboo, diet and so on. So, well, if a panda, shall we say, passes away, then what do you do about it? And what does that say about the state relationship, right? So while it is China's sort of soft diplomacy, but of course, as I say, it comes with a price.
Yeah, an interesting point that you bring up because it takes a certain amount of expertise as well, apart from costs. When you have a situation around the globe for the past 18 to 20 months where tourism numbers have dropped by so much, I mean, is there still a point in having this policy? Has there been any, I don't know, any word with regard to whether this would be maintained?
Well, I think it's getting more expensive for these countries to host the panda because they could not charge people fees for entering the zoos and so on, right, due to the pandemic. So, well, I think on China's part, as it is now the world's second largest economy, you will have to really consider whether to, for example, still charge the up to $1 million type of rental fees, or at least you could waive that part, right? And then the other, like you say, the technical upkeeps and then so on, that would have to be borne by the hosting country. But it's something cute and people like that, you know, like the that the birth of this carp created somewhat of a hoo-ha in Singapore as well, right?
Yeah, I wonder who owns the panda then, since it was born here in Singapore. What kind of citizenship does it have?
It has China citizenship, both the pandas themselves as well as any offspring they produce.
There you go. That's a clear example of panda diplomacy right there. Dr. Oh Eng San, Senior Fellow, Singapore Institute of International Affairs, on the line with me. Dr. Oh, I really appreciate your time this morning. You take care and stay safe, yeah?
Thank you. You too.
The Asian Insider Podcast channel is also available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Like us and rate us.